Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode of the Cult Pop Show podcast was brought to you by our Patreon. If you want to tell us which films we should watch, get up to 2 extra exclusive podcasts a month, give us something to talk about in the post-credits scene at the end of each episode, or join us for our monthly movie club Zoom call where we discuss a film together, then please consider joining the cult and donating at www.patreon.com/cultpopshow.
Hello, everybody, and welcome along to the Cult Popshow podcast. Hello.
Starting it like an apology video?
Hi.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to talk about something.
My truth.
I'm not even wearing makeup, just to show you guys how serious I am.
Speaking of apologies, today we're going to be doing something.
Well, tomorrow we're going to be making one.
Yeah, that's a better way of making the joke. Thank you. I am AJ, talking with Richard, of course. This is our show. And today on the podcast...
This is our show.
What is?
I know. It's, we've never introduced an episode like that.
Well, it's a day for first, because today we're going to do discuss a topic which we've just discovered 6 weeks ago. I vetoed when you suggested it, and then yesterday I you'd suggested it and I vetoed it, I suggested it to you. And so that's what we're talking about today. Today we're talking about problematic faves, more specifically justifying our problematic. That'll be the name of the episode, justifying our problematic faves. And it wasn't until we already put the call out onto Discord for people to, you know, suggest their own thoughts on the subject that I was sitting on my couch and all of a sudden I went, is this going to be a bad taste idea to do? Yeah. Which was also the reason 6 weeks ago that I vetoed it. So You never know with me. I'm just a wacky cat. Do you know what happened last night? Speaking of problematic. my flatmate was like, I'm going to go get a curry. And I don't know if I want to go to Bombay Butler or Curry Junction. And I said to her, I was like, Curry Junction sounds like a derogatory name for like an Indian, like a part of town with a big Indian population, you know, like you could hear boomers calling this place, oh, bloody Curry Junction. And she said to me, you've said that to me before. And I was like, I have no memory of saying to you before. I just conceived the same joke twice, which does happen sometimes if I'm listening back to an old podcast episode and you set me up, I'll make the same joke in my head that I then make on the podcast.
That's the reason I've said before I only listen to my own podcast, because, you know, I make those jokes in my head listening to other people's podcasts and they're not said out loud, whereas on my podcast, they are.
So, Richard, for those who don't understand what we mean by problematic fave, do you want to give a quick improvised definition, maybe, of what?
So, a problematic fave is a character or a person who's done or said something offensive or otherwise problematic. Your fave is problematic is a phrase that usually accompanies a cited list of these offensive things. The term is used exclusively in discussions about fandom, celebrities, and media. So there is like a, your fave is problematic when you're like, oh my God, I love, you know, XYZ. And then someone goes, actually, your fave is problematic. And then I'm actually is you, that this person's a piece of shit.
Right. So the one of the reasons I think, well, first of all, let's say before anything, while we won't be going into details, a lot of the stuff we're going to discuss today is problematic because of the idea of like cancelled celebrities who were involved. And so vague mentions around assault and things, nasty shit like that might come up. I don't anticipate we'll dissect it much. But
the
thing is,
I think we're expecting most of the big cancellations, the Kevin Spaceys, the Harvey Weinsteins, we're expecting you to come into this knowing what they did. We're not here to educate you why.
But if that sort of thing upsets you, please do feel free to skip this episode. But what we're really exploring, we say problematic faves, but what we're really exploring and what two white dudes from New Zealand feel entitled to be able to answer is the question that has become increasingly more relevant.
We feel privileged to answer.
It's a question that's become increasingly more relevant in a post-Me Too era and sort of just a general age of enlightenment, is can you separate the art from the artist? Or perhaps, to put it in a more cloying and desperate way, is it okay to still enjoy art made by problematic people? Because, you know, 20 years ago, the answer was a resounding yes, no one cares. You could be a fan of an actor or a director's entire career and never find out that, whoop, they married a 14-year-old girl, you know, that sort of thing. I say 20 years ago and before, of course, I think.
There was one sweet spot the week after 9/11. They were like, anything's game.
It literally is the week after 9/11 right now that we're recording this. So, you know, I always remember, like, watching, I don't know, like an Eddie Murphy movie and people being like, oh, you know, he's done some dirty stuff. And people like, oh, yeah, but whatever. So Mel Gibson's a great example of someone who seems to have been able to evade all of this, even through the Me Too movement and stuff like that. Whereas now it's like Kevin Spacey's never going to work again. Well, I think he actually did.
Yeah, he has got a new film coming out.
But you know, like, no, you know, I'm not going to see it. Are you going to see
it? I'm not going to hire him, no.
And so I think, and things like the Michael Jackson documentary that came out a couple years ago, and things like that,
Leaving Neverland.
But Johnny Depp is in Finding Neverland. Yeah. It's becoming harder and harder to navigate what you maybe consider aligned with your moral judgment to watch and enjoy, so much so that I've seen a piece of discourse rise up through the conversation, which is like, you need to learn how to enjoy this stuff still while also criticizing it and being aware of what's wrong.
Yeah, and I would say, is this the kind of, we can move on to the body now?
Just of course, we are two privileged, ignorant, dumb white guys who are fallible. And so we're not here to draw lines in the sand. We're not here to say, like, if someone did this, yes, you can still watch
their movies. We're not categorizing offenses and saying these ones are okay.
This is us sharing our personal experiences and also some experiences from our listeners.
Because one of the first sort of, when we put out the call, one of the first sort of calls we, the responses we got was from Mike Noyes, who said that being Gen X, just about every movie I love from the 80s and 90s has at least one problematic thing in it, even if we didn't know it at the time. So I guess growing up with the films, I'm willing to forgive the parts that don't hold up well because I love the rest of it, like the F word being dropped in Bill and Ted. I presume he's talking about the F slur, not the
other F word. Yeah. they say fuck in Bill and Ted, and it just destroys me. Yeah, Bill and Ted, what otherwise just such an innocent movie.
So this is the thing, because I think this is a good discussion and kind of a good leaping off point as well, that what you were kind of saying about context and all that stuff, because the thing you always hear is like, it was a different time, you know. Like there's you know, one example that people often use, typically more right-wing people, is there's a movie called The Dam Busters, which is, you know, this great war epic kind of thing, but the main character's dog is a little black dog, and it's just called the N-word, and that's the dog's name, and it's based on a real guy that was the dog's actual name, and everyone goes, well, you couldn't make The Dam Busters now. I think Peter Jackson was going to do a remake of it, and it's like, you know, cancel culture, you can't even, like, that's historically accurate, that's what he called his dog. And it's like, well, okay, A, you don't have to use the dog's name in the film, and B, like, he was wrong to do that at the time. The whole thing of you know, the N-word used to be acceptable. It's like, it wasn't. It's just, you didn't care who it affected because they were so marginalized. But, like, I think, like, historical context does go a certain way, and what Mike's talking about with, you know, more problematic language, or like the classic thing of like 80s hijinks and teen movies are often, you know, various forms of sexual assault. And I think it's like, you, depending on the film as well, like, and it varies, because some films it's like, well, this film was always bad, we just can stop revisiting it, who cares? But some it's like Bill and Ted, especially if it, you know, means so much to you and they use this word in it, that I think, you know, you, like, you don't necessarily need to stop watching the film, but I think it's like, if you, especially, like, you know, if you grew up with it, you know all the context and you can reconcile with that yourself. But I think, say, you know, you have kids and you want to show them Bill and Ted, you want to show them The Hangover, whatever, I think, you know, it's important to teach that context. And I think that, you know, just by saying, like, no one's ever allowed to watch this movie again because it has that word in it, I think, you know, you're losing the opportunity to use these as, like, learning experiences for people. Because, you know, the whole thing of, like, if you don't learn from history, you're doomed to repeat it. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is important still.
Yeah. And look, this is, we didn't mention this yet, but this is one of our favorite subjects here at Cult Pop Show. I mean, how many podcasts have we done? How many franchises have we covered where we've ended up having these very tiptoey, walking on eggshells conversations? Which, and I'm not complaining, I'm saying, like, I'm just wanting to, like, the last thing I want to do is actually upset someone, I guess. And, like, even in, like, two of our major video essays from the last year or so have been about American Pie and Borat and things. And so, like, this is a subject that very much fascinates me, and we've never really dedicated a whole podcast to it.
Do you have any, because it's one of these things, this is especially, like, this whole podcast, all those topics where it's like, I want to give out my opinion, and this is one of very few times where you have the opportunity to tell me that I'm incorrect. And I will be willing to accept that, you know, like,
me, the judge and jury and executioner of what is problematic and not, another white dude.
It's just like I don't know, like, if I deserve to be challenged on something, I want to be challenged on it.
Yeah, same.
And, yeah. Which, you know, maybe it shouldn't just be us.
Maybe this is a poorly conceived idea, and we should have planned this ahead of time.
Yeah, maybe we should have done the other idea for our off-week this week.
Not this harrowing discussion is offensive.
Should we just pivot to that? Still call the episode, or call it more relating to what we do instead. But it just starts with, like, 11 minutes of just this.
Yeah, I think that's. I think let's keep going with this idea because we've prepared something. And then if it gets to the point where we're both sweating fucking bullets trying to explain that, like, well, of course I'm not justifying that they use that word. So the one thing I think as well to define here is, like, problematic faves and problematic media is not always media which is tarnished because Kevin Spacey was an executive producer on it. Sometimes it's just the subject matter involved is problematic. Sometimes it's media that has been tarnished by a fan base, which is something I think is a very new new kind of thing that's been elevated to the level of problem. You know, like, they've always been toxic Star Wars fans and stuff, but I feel like,
yeah, they always fucking will be as well.
But I feel like Pickle Rick from Rick and Morty really, like, made a lot of people ashamed to say they still watch Rick and Morty. And part of the reason we wanted to do this episode now is because the Rick and Morty season 5 finale just aired, and Brooklyn Nine-Nine, another show we'll probably talk about on this episode, finished up as well. But yeah, you've got, you know, I'm a fan of Rick and I've watched Rick and Morty. I think Fight Club is one of the best movies ever made, you know, like,
I think Pickle Rick's funniest shit I've ever seen.
Like, I have what people would call red flag opinions. If you don't learn more about them. And so
you also have plenty of white flag opinions.
Oh, thank you.
Ones that you just immediately surrender.
Oh, right. Well, I feel like that should go hand in hand with red flag opinions, probably. And, like, one that has affected me probably more so than you, and I feel like maybe isn't a universal feeling, is when I was a teenager, I was really, really into the movie 500 Days of Summer, and I probably haven't revisited it recently enough to say whether or not that's still true. When I think about it, I still really like that movie. But as I got older, people criticized it a lot. And well, if you haven't seen 500 Days of Summer, it's about a guy dealing with a breakup. He's played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Summer, the girl, is played by Zooey Deschanel. And I thought it was such a wonderful perspective to show the world of like what it's like to be heartbroken as a boy, because you don't see that enough. And I loved it as a teenager, but like then as I got older and all these sorts of schools of thought started coming out, people would be like, it's Fight Club for soft boys, you know? And I was like, what are people talking about? Mainly because it kind of solely depicts the male side of the story, or does it? This is the question, because Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who is the star of the film, he actually did an interview in 2012, which was considerably before like this kind of the way the what he's
like
about,
before women and minorities and people.
No, before people were aware of these problems, I think, in the mainstream sense. But and so it's interesting to read what he says. He says, the 500 Days of Summer attitude of he wants you so bad seems attractive to some women and men, especially younger ones. But I would encourage anyone who has a crush on my character to watch it again and examine how selfish he is. He develops a mildly delusional obsession over a girl onto whom he projects all these fantasies. He thinks she'll give his life meaning because he doesn't care about much else going on in his life. A lot of boys and girls think their lives will have meaning if they find a partner who wants nothing else in life but them. That's not healthy. That's falling in love with the idea of a person, not the actual person, which I think is a very astute idea that doesn't discount the themes of the movie.
I think that's in the text, though.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Like, yeah, it's I guess you're talking about the fan base thing. That's a missing the point thing rather than the movie being problematic. Yeah,
which is true of Fight Club, where like. Yeah. If you idolize Tyler Durden, you've sympathized with the expression.
You've already lost.
The villain of the movie, you know.
And Joker, obviously, is another example.
But Joker's interesting, isn't it? Because I don't think the director gets it. I think the director sides with Tyler Durden. I think the director is, like, the movie maybe stands on its own as its own thing. Maybe you can't separate the art from the artist, Richard. But I don't know if Todd Phillips, director of Joker, or even, like, Dan Harmon or Justin Roiland from Rick and Morty fully understand the, like, the levels that they... The kind of balancing act that
well,
they're walking
it's interesting you bring up Dan Harmon as well, because he's one of very few people I think that actually managed to like skirt a cancellation by just doing a really good apology. Like Dan Harmon's, you know, not cancelled by any means, really. I mean, obviously, you know, when allegations come out, there's always going to be at least some people that, you know,
we'll absolutely valid.
Exactly. Yeah. You know?
I can totally understand if someone wrote off Dan Harmon after what it was like. He used his...
he essentially had a crush on someone he worked with, and
well, someone who worked for him.
Someone who worked for him, and so it, like, you know, he would, yeah, it was that kind of thing of like he thought it was this reciprocated thing without realizing. Well, this is what he says in his apology. This reciprocated thing, not realizing that. He controls her paycheck. He controls how well she does in the industry from here on out. And I think a big part of also him skirting cancellation is that the woman it's about, Megan Gans, accepted his apology, essentially.
Yeah, she told everyone to go watch his apology on Twitter and stuff.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, and that's really interesting. And I do think, I hate to be the mouthpiece for this side of the argument, because I think it gets very much abused by the bad guys. But like, at what point do you just have to forgive people? And like, especially when it's like pseudo, what is it called? Like when you think you have a relationship with someone. Pseudo-wudo. That's, yeah, thank you.
The Pokemon.
You know, like when you think you know someone because they're famous, but they have no idea who you are.
Oh, parasocial.
Parasocial. Like, especially with something like that. Like, Dan Harmon doesn't need me to forgive him. He doesn't know.
And that's the thing. And also, like, at the same time, Megan Gans doesn't need me to still be angry at Dan Harmon for her.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of these things. They've publicly you know, aired their whatever. And so, I mean, yeah, it's up to you which way you want to fall on it, but it's their life.
Yeah. And I guess there is a case of, do you feel like there is a line in I've been thinking a lot about how, like, Ewan McGregor cheated on his wife with Mary Elizabeth Winstead, and how, like, that's absolutely not enough for me to cancel him in my mind. Like, an actor cheating on their wife? Pff, I don't care. That's not that bad.
Yeah, I mean, like, Trump cheated on his wife, and you still voted for him.
I did not. What are you doing? Of all the episodes to not make jokes about that sort of thing on, this
well, is at least, like that joke is impossible. You don't have American citizenship. And that's you were true. Too young in 2016 as well. You're a little baby, AJ.
Thank you.
Yeah, it is.
For those frantically doing the math right now, I was not too young in 2016.
Oh, so, okay.
Oh,
all
so
right.
You admit it. Richard cancels AJ, the movie.
Yeah, it's interesting, the thing of cheating. Yeah.
Hmm. Like, I guess, I mean, there is a, I think the line is, like, is it manipulative, or is it illegal, is almost where because it's not, like, anyone can cheat on their wife, but, and nothing will happen to them.
Frequently do.
Yeah, whereas, like, things like Kevin Spacey or Louis C.K. are, like, these are illegal things that happen, and they get away with it because they're famous.
Yeah.
And men, as well, because it's not, like, non-famous men don't get away with this shit all the time either.
Yeah, it's interesting. And mentioning Louis C.K., I want it because do you remember, I mean, I guess this is going to be more of a free-flowing episode than we kind of thought, but after Louis C.K., because it is like there's like the trifecta of like the three big cancellations of the Me Too, or the, you know, the things of the Me Too movement. That was Harvey Weinstein, Louis C.K. and Kevin Spacey. Mm-hmm. And that's actually like, those were the three that the New York Times broke the story. So there is a reason why you've heard those ones more. And because, you know, they came out within a few weeks of each other and was like, fuck, like every man in Hollywood is going to get this kind of thing. And then there was, you know, bits here and there, and some of it was conjecture and all this kind of stuff, but those like three reputable sources and whatnot, so that they kind of became the poster boys for it. But after Louis C.K.'s one came out, Sarah Silverman, who had a show called I Love You America, which was like a chat show, she did this monologue at the start where it was like, can you love people who did bad things? And it's a really interesting thing, because it's essentially saying like, hey, what's happening in Hollywood right now is long overdue and it's a good thing. But, you know, I love Louis C.K. Like, he's been one of my best friends for 25 years. And so do I hate what he did, but I still love him because, you know, I always have, essentially. And it's like, and so she's kind of like just saying, airing on live TV, saying like, I'm processing this. I'll keep you updated. But because you would feel the sense of betrayal. And it's like, you know, you think about arguments you have, or like, you know, when your friend or your partner or your family member like really hurts you, it's like, you're not just immediately like, obviously it's on a different scale, but you're not immediately like, well, I hate this person, I'm never talking to them again. You do have that kind of that weird sense, and it must be a difficult thing to, you know, for something like Sarah Silverman to go through, and then also to have to kind of publicly go through that, because, you know, it wouldn't be out of the question for her to, you know, go visit Louis C.K., see how he's doing kind of thing. And then you don't want to be snapped by the paparazzi being like, Sarah Silverman's seen with Louis C.K. So you kind of have to actually announce that stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would recommend, because, yeah, it kind of scratches the surface, really. But it's, you're talking about that idea of what we're saying. Can you love problematic people or their art and not like the person?
Yeah. And I think it does depend, I've found anyway, it's very conditional on what the art is itself. And I think we did get a message on the Discord about this. But one thing I don't think I can revisit, more so than I can't revisit other things this person has been in, is American Beauty, the Kevin Spacey starring 1999 Best Picture winner. Used to be one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, do you want me to read out the comment?
Yeah, yeah.
So this is from Bliss My Dog, who actually just joined the Discord, and then immediately, this is their first message, so that's good. Hi, just joined. I'm going to argue that American Beauty is still an amazing, if exceptionally brilliant film. It's decisive, and it's rather corny attitudes towards beauty. I think there was a line that that film nimbly treaded upon release. I think there was a line that film nimbly treaded upon release that has retrospectively been crossed. For example, Ricky, the boyfriend, has an increasingly stalkerous nature to him that I guess would have been seen as charming in 1999, but nowadays comes off as nothing short of what the fuck. The film somewhat addresses this. I've seen it said that it has a distinct naivete towards suburban culture pre-9/11, and while I can attest to that, the film can be re-examined as a period piece in that regard. That said, the stuff with Kevin Spacey is horrifically similar to what we know about him now. However, the conviction that his character has to not cross the line exemplifies the beauty, I'd argue, in retrospect. If there's beauty in anything, it's seeing the ego of a shitty, bitter old man be torn apart by the realization that he based his entire life around the idea that Angela, his daughter's friend that he lost for, is a true innocent. It's an amplification of human nature that's so raw and powerful, yet couldn't be told in today's culture. That said, the plastic bag thing is just corny and doesn't really work as powerfully as it once did. They do. There was a discussion that followed on from that, essentially saying, someone's, I think it might have been Bliss My Dog, that said they had a film professor like explain that scene, and they compared it to the Anyone Can Cook from Ratatouille, that it's like anything can be beautiful, and it's kind of an examination of that.
Mm. So I think all of that is a really exceptional analysis, and I mean, we did say that we're justifying our problematic faves here, which I did do with the 500 Days of Summer thing, so it's not like it's just we asked the Discord to like, can you go out to bat for these dangerous things to go out to bat for, and then we come on and be like, no. What I will say is that that perspective is very profound and very much works, and maybe it had worked in 1999, but like, I can tell you right now, if something like that was made now, the criticism would be like, oh great, we need the perspective of an old white man on young woman, you know. And like, I know that is in the text as well, but it's like, it's that thing where it's like, who are you, who is your protagonist? Are you making your protagonist the less important perspective to understand? So yeah, that is something I don't think, with respect to Bliss My Dog, I don't think I'll watch American Beauty again ever in the rest of my life. Like, it's too close to what actually happened. It's too close to bone, and I don't think that's, I just don't think that I can look past that anymore. I can still watch A Bug's Life, even though that's got Kevin Spacey and directed by John Lasseter.
Someone did mention Pixar as well.
I mean, Pixar is still dearly important to me.
Yeah.
And you know, they had like an internal investigation happen. Like, that's how bad things got there. And it's like you talk about, people talk about separating the art from the artist when it's shit you don't care about. And it's like, yeah, well, whatever, I don't care. Like, I'm, you know, never grew up with the Bill Cosby show.
I was never gonna watch I Love You Daddy, the Louis C.K. film.
Yeah, and so it's like I can throw away the Bill Cosby show. But then when it's like Pixar, I'm like, oh, I've got to rationalize this now. So yeah, I think another example actually is and more recently is the turfification of J.K. Rowling.
This is a big one. Only one person kind of briefly mentioned it in response to a meme I shared. Chi said Harry Potter is definitely a problematic face of mine. I presume that was supposed to be fave, but you called out on pod for
didn't
not
edit
fixing
it in time,
your
dickhead.
Yeah, Harry Potter's an interesting one. And I spoke to Jess about this off pod, that because I know that you know, Harry Potter's a big thing for her. And she was kind of saying that the thing she loves about Harry Potter is the community aspect of it, of like that it became this thing that you would read and chat to your friends about and exchange theories, and it, you know, it's this monolith that's a bit like Project Mayhem in Fight Club, that it's like it's grown larger than the person who created it. And you know, kind of said that, like, and this is interesting as well, is that like J.K. Rowling actually did quite a lot of good stuff, like, you know, like publicly, openly donated to a lot of charities and stuff, but she seemingly just has this one really shitty opinion. And so it's like,
yeah,
Well, you, like, you look like you're about to cancel me.
No, no, I'm laughing because you're right. She does. She has one shitty opinion. It's just a really hot topic.
Okay,
right,
yeah. Now. It looked like you were like, dude.
No, no, not at all. I think that's why
Harry Potter hasn't undergone this like big cancellation. Necessarily.
That's a very positive, optimistic look on it. I would look at it more as Harry Potter has an unbreakable grasp on the millennial generation.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. But it's like, I think that, you know, like, because, I mean, other Zoomers are like, you know, oh, you do millennials always ask about your Hogwarts house and shit like that. But it's like, I think that as a whole, there isn't a large, like, ooh, how can you still like Harry Potter, you know? There's a, ooh, how can you still support J.K. Rowling? Especially, like, with new stuff that's created. Like, Fantastic Beasts 3 will be an interesting one, because I think that that'll, not only because J.K. Rowling's trash, but the second film was even worse than J.K. Rowling as a person. Like, I mean, obviously all the opinions she holds are detestable, but Crimes of Grindelwald was the worst thing she's done. But yes, and it's interesting, like, the Hogwarts Legacy game as well, that this upcoming, you know, open world RPG set in the world of Harry Potter. But it's like, it is funny to read, you know, especially if you'd read this like 5 years ago, to read like Hogwarts Legacy, the developers being like, J.K. Rowling is not active in the development of this. That, like, separating yourself from the auteur of your world.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that
it's
a selling point as well.
Yeah. The person who
authored this world you love because of how well the story was told is not telling the story, so you don't have to worry.
Yeah. Like, it is fun that, like, another similar thing like this as well that I remember thinking was when our opposition party in New Zealand had a new leader who only lasted 2 months. But one of the big scandals was that he refused to call the president of the United States a racist. And it's like, imagine saying that in, like, you know, 2000, like, in the height of Obama's presidency. Yeah. Be like, yeah, no, there's like going to be a cancellation because someone, and it's like, I mean, you know, nothing needs to be said about Trump, but it's like the idea that a leader of a political party is like, one of the most powerful positions in the world, that's like, you know, you won't say that the man's detestable.
Yeah,
but yeah, the thing about this Hogwarts Legacy game, that it'll be interesting when it comes out, because yeah, there's like, obviously some money's still going to end up in J.K. Rowling's pocket, but like, I mean, I want to play the game. I know Jess wants to play the game, and it's like, I would, you know, the game would be at like $100, I would quite happily also donate $40-$50 to Rainbow Youth or something to balance it out, and then be like, yeah, like, I've, you know,
I mean, I'll probably see Fantastic Beasts 3 just for the curiosity. Unless, I mean, I guess it depends how, if there's like, I could very easily be guilted out of seeing it. I think,
yeah.
Yeah, like, that is a really interesting case, especially again where it's like, that's, she hasn't done anything illegal, she's just expressed bad opinions
because she's one of the ones as well that's like, she said something shitty. I mean, I've hated J.K. Rowling for a long time. I've been on record as like thinking she's garbage before any of this, but the like, it was the fact that she like doubled down on it. And similar to Louis C.K. actually, like, his one seemed like, or like when it happened, there was a lot of like, yeah, because obviously Louis C.K. was one of the ones that people were like, oh, not him, you know. That he was one that, like, a lot of people were saying, like, he could probably come out the other side of this.
I don't think he will anymore.
But no, the thing is, like, less than a year later, he was back doing, like, sets in clubs, talking about, like, you know, making jokes about it. And it's like, yeah, I think, because his one seemed to be one of those ones that it's like, you're misinformed about the dynamic here and consent, you know? Because he says that, you know, everyone was consenting but didn't understand that thing of why they felt they couldn't say no, you know? And yeah, it's like, yeah, you could have used that for education, but it's like, he was just like, nah, itching to get back in the spotlight. And now it's like, well, now you've proven that you didn't use this as a learning experience. You've proven that you didn't learn anything from your experience. So
yeah,
that's not necessarily worse, but it's like just as bad as like, yeah.
Yeah. And on the flip side of that, an example of a creator sort of pivoting and learning from their mistakes, but still a creator I do not like watching anymore, is Matt Stone and Trey Parker, the creators of South Park, who a little bit of backstory for me is that South Park I saw the South Park movie when I was like 12 or 13, and it blew me away. And in my early teenage years, I became obsessed with South Park. I watched the whole series and I kept watching the new seasons up until season 21, I think, where they had an episode about the trans athlete debate where they, you know, picked the side I disagree with, and I basically thought to myself, I don't think I can justify watching South Park anymore. With like all I stand for and all I believe in, I think I have to let go.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Of South Park, which, you know, wasn't a very difficult decision, to be honest.
Someone on the Discord did mention South Park. The Almighty Watcher said, "I'm not smart enough to articulate anything, but I love South Park. And watching from the start and hearing how casually they use the F slur and R word is pretty bothersome to me now, but they also grow as a show and eventually stop using the words. I found with South Park, the joke is often on the person saying offensive things and less funny because... unless being funny because it's offensive, but there was also just a bunch of racism, ableism, and homophobia played for laughs in the early seasons. I would say, like, South Park, again, is one of those things that, like, the common defense is, like, well, they make fun of everyone, you know?
Which is something I could maybe sympathize with 5 years ago, but do you want to know, it was a fucking meme that made me give up South Park. It was like a TikTok that had been posted to Twitter or something, and it was like this woman being like, all these people saying that South Park is all good because it makes fun of everyone. All right, well, let's see who creates South Park. And it's two white men. And it's like, cool, yeah, these are the people who should be proclaiming that it's okay to make fun of everyone. Like, you know, like rich, privileged white dudes, of course, you know. Of course they would say that. I've seen other people call it the white man reactionary show that should have been cancelled 15 years ago. And we talked about this in the Borat video essay we did, that it's like, South Park is very much something that has outlived its place in society, I think.
Yeah, because I was going to say that the way South Park operates, that it's like this adult comedy that each episode's made within a week and immediately reacts to whatever happened. There is definitely like a show like that should exist, I think. Or like there's certainly a place for that, or has been at some point. But yeah,
By a perspective I'm very familiar with and no longer get value out of hearing. One thing I did want to bring up though with South Park is a couple years ago they released a really interesting episode, because in 2006 or 2007 they released an episode which essentially just made fun of Al Gore for making An Inconvenient Truth, and made a whole episode about how climate change wasn't actually real. And the episode, you've probably seen it, is Al Gore telling everyone there's something called a man bear pig attacking people.
Funniest shit I've ever seen.
Which is this mythical monster that's a metaphor for climate change. And then in 2018, they released like a 2 or 3-parter episode where man bear pig turned out to actually be real and started attacking everyone. And there's like this famous scene from it where there's this guy in a cafe and man bear pig is like murdering everyone behind him. And he's just like, I just don't think there's enough evidence to prove. And Al Gore's character was back in it, and like a major recurring joke in it was that whenever Al Gore turned up in the scene, all the characters had to be like, I'm sorry, you were right, I'm sorry. Mm. Which is not the first time South Park has essentially looked at itself and gone like, oh God, we created incels. Oh God, we created the alt-right. What do we do now?
I created a monster.
Exactly. And I think it is fascinating to watch a show grapple with something like that. Mm. But yeah, for me, I couldn't justify it anymore, and so I gave up on it.
I do want to talk about musicians. Mm-hmm. As well, because music's almost like, because the thing is, you watch like a Kevin Spacey movie or a movie executive produced by Harvey Weinstein or whatever, and you can go like, and this was the thing that like when there were these projects that were completed, and it's like, well, should these be released? That they go, well, like so many people worked on them, why mm-hmm. should we, you know, throw it out because of one person? And you know, yeah, like it would suck to have your work thrown out like that, but music is kind of different because it's a lot more singular. It feels, obviously there's, you know, producers, record labels, all that, but you know, you're listening to a song by Michael Jackson, it's like, this is just Michael Jackson you're consuming.
The interesting example to choose, I feel like Michael Jackson's team, like I'm very anti Michael Jackson and frankly have never liked his music that much, so I did, you know, that was one of the ones where I was like, yeah, I'll boycott Michael Jackson, I don't care. But like I was talking to someone recently about this and they specifically said Michael Jackson's a really difficult example to use because Michael Jackson essentially had like maybe not a movie production size behind him, but enough people behind him that it is so many other people's work. Mm-hmm. Whereas someone, a good example would be someone like R. Kelly, who was, you know, ostensibly operating on their own.
Well, actually, an example that I hadn't heard of, but it's a good one that Dan on Discord mentioned, is a band called Power Bottom, which is stylized with no vowels. Is an indie queer punk rock band that he absolutely loved. One day before the release of their second album, Pageant, in spring 2017, allegations of sexual misconduct, that's putting it lightly, came out. I was really upset and shit hit the fan fast. Their label dropped them and the album was about to be scrubbed. In fact, it's not even on Spotify. I ended up buying a CD and vinyl of the album because I was convinced it would become lost media. I played it nonstop in my car for months and still do sometimes. It's an amazing album and by far my most problematic fave. It's got amazing music about queer angst and has been inspirational creatively for me. It's a shame I can't enjoy it without the bad being at the back of my mind. Now, I looked this up and it was actually 2 days before the album came out. So Jesus. I think we can disregard most of what he said. Because he said one day. And it's like, if you're not going to fact check, Dan, I can't trust you. But yeah, like obviously, you know, I hadn't heard of this band, looked them up, and the band disbanded not long after. I didn't look too much into the allegations, but it is sexual assault. This band is probably just these two people and, you know, not much else. And so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know where I'm going. Also, in the Discord as well, people said, you know, a lot of these old rock stars as well, like definitely there's so many stories about like Led Zeppelin, Motley Crue wrote a whole book about it and then made a movie about that book. But yeah, and people started to mention David Bowie, and you posted, whenever people mention David Bowie, I'm like, and that gif of the, you know, monkey thing, like shifting its eyes. And I was like, does this mean you like or don't like David Bowie?
I like David Bowie's music fine, but you know, dig a little and you can find some pretty damning allegations against David Bowie. And he feels untouchable. It feels like if you try to go for David Bowie, no one's going to listen to you. And like, I don't know if it's necessarily a platform I need to run on to try and,
to try and get elected.
Yeah, exactly. I remember the first time I heard about this was someone was like, David Bowie died in 2016 so that he couldn't get cancelled. And I was like, oh, that's a pretty funny joke, if a little dark. And someone was like, actually, though, like, if you look into it, it's not hard to find some stuff.
Also, like, Hugh Hefner died, like, a couple of weeks before the Me Too movement.
shit like that. And it's like, it's not like I think I'm better than all of this. I like a bunch of, celebrities who, if I did a modicum of research, I would find aren't you know, have substantial allegations against them. And I think with music, I think what's interesting with music is you pointed out that it's like, it is less of a, it's less clear cut with movies because it's often like, it's put behind the face of one person. But also I think another element of that is that music is maybe more acutely emotionally resonant with people than a movie could be. You know, like people might like fucking
Armie Hammer.
There you go. People might like The Social Network, but it's like the this has changed my life level of art won't hit everyone. It maybe hits some people, but won't hit everyone. Whereas like a lot of music is more directly taps into one's heart. And so I think people are more desperate to defend it and more emotionally invested.
Well, and also it's like that thing of, you know, if you love The Social Network and then Armie Hammer turns out to be 100% a cannibal, it's like, yeah, he's a smaller part of it as well. Whereas like music, it's like, Lost Prophets, like it's a direct, like, there's more of that direct, like, I'm the creator and I'm speaking directly to you
through
my art. Whereas like Armie Hammer is like a tiny part of the social network. It's obviously, it feels different if you then watch, say, Call Me By Your Name.
Call Me By Your Name's a great, that's American Beauty territory where like because it's like quite a sexual story, it feels a lot less forgivable. Whereas him playing the like psychotic villain and Sorry to Bother You kind of enhances the movie with him being an actual cannibal Armie Hammer.
I like that there's one cancellation that we can joke about.
Yeah, that he's a cannibal. The Lost Prophets is a really interesting one. If you want to feel sick to your stomach, look up what the lead singer of Lost Prophets went to prison for. And that is something where it's like, you just can't. You can't buy Lost Prophets CDs anymore.
But then there's one because it's a band. And you know, like literally, AJ said, if you want to feel sick to your stomach, that's not an exaggeration in the slightest. Like, this is straight up like proof that evil exists.
It's the worst one. that's how I'll describe it. Of all these stories, this is the worst one. Don't look it up.
Don't look it up. But like, yeah, he was part of a band who had, you know, no idea what was going on, and they started a new band called No Devotion, and it's like, it was one of those things where I'm like, yeah, like, you know, if you truly knew nothing, good for you. Like, I hope that the new band, they've broken up now, but I mean, that would fucking destroy you, you know, sharing a tour bus with this guy. Like, but yeah, like I mean, Lost Prophets is the worst one. It's hard to reconcile any of that.
One of the last ones we could talk about before maybe delving into the Discord comments a bit more, and I'm curious to hear your perspective on this, because I did not watch this show, but you just finished the tumultuous season finale of it, series finale of it, is Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which, you know, very popular police-based sitcom, and then the Black Lives Matter movement happened, and everyone was like, sort of decrying propaganda shows, and Brooklyn Nine-Nine being a comedy, I think especially affected its ability to continue on in that respect.
And I mean, at one point I even suggested a spin-off podcast to you where we would go through every episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine through, you know, the eyes of kind of how more people look at the world now, and it would be called Brooklyn 2020, not because of not necessarily only because of, you know, the changes that happened in 2020, but also hindsight being 2020.
It's one of the greatest ideas you've ever come up with, I think. And I'm sorry I don't have the devotion to a Brooklyn Nine-Nine podcast.
But yeah, I like, because Brooklyn Nine-Nine is interesting because it's one of those things that, again, because it's a comedy, you had like Rosa, one of the main characters, is like, you look at her early seasons and she finds police brutality funny, you know, like that that's one of her quirks,
right? Is okay, that, Jesus Christ,
what, like, but it's like in you know, so, someone's harassing people on the street. Like I can't actually think of an example, but it's like, you know, she's a fairly violent person and it's played for laughs. And there's times when, you know, Jake, I think the thing that Brooklyn Nine-Nine has always managed to like skirt the rules up until 2020 when, you know, when it all came crashing down is that, it was like the end justified the means kind of thing. That it was Jake would always have a hunch, use not necessarily the best ways to do it, but he would end up being proven right. And that was kind of like how they got away with it. There's like one where he holds someone in interrogation without probable cause, but it's like, yeah, the guy did it, you know, of course. And yeah, this final season was really interesting, I think. Like, it did a lot to try and deal with it, and you know,
it's hard when attitudes change towards police globally like overnight,
yeah,
basically. And I didn't really watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and I personally, after the Black Lives Matter protests, my position on it was like, I just don't think they should make the next season. And it's not that like all the people involved. Like, I love Michael Schur, is he creator of it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Michael Schur, and I love Andy Samberg and like all the people involved in it, I think are great. And so, like, in
to think of a person of color in the cast to say you love.
No, Andre Brower, I know that. I just want to go through the whole cast. But I think it's something where it's like, I'm standing with them as artists and being like, I don't think you can keep doing this. Mm. Like, because I don't begrudge the show for existing. I think it probably went into production with probably a pretty superficial view of what police life was like. I'm sure it's not a very realistic show when it comes to what police work is like. And it really does feel like they were conceiving a sitcom and threw a dart at a dartboard and it landed on police.
Workplace comedy. Police,
yeah. And that's the problem, is that, and now it's representing that. And I think, especially with it being a comedy, it's a lot more accessible to people. And I, with respect to you and all our listeners who watched it, I just don't get how I'll rephrase that. As someone who is anti-cop, I couldn't justify watching that show anymore. You know, not anymore.
Yeah, like it is interesting because it's one of those things again that it's like Terry Crews and Andre Brower, who, you know, two black men who are like primary cast members, it's like they were like actively involved in where the season went and things like that, and it's like they probably know the situation better than I do. Mm-hmm. You know, and so it's like, you know, I can kind of, it's easy to be on board when it's like you actually do have more informed voices than mine in the writer's room. And taking an active role in development. But I think that this final season did something really interesting. So the first episode of the final season, because they famously scrapped four episodes, they'd written four scripts and just said, nah, we're starting again because we can't not address what happened last year. The first episode comes out and it's called The Good Ones, because the whole thing of like, and I think that's one of the things that kind of blew up last year is the idea that, you know, there are a few bad apples, you know, and whatnot, and they're like, oh, you're one of the good ones. But the idea of, and the whole idea behind ACAB or Cops and Bastards is that, like, there are no good ones because the system is broken. And you go and read fucking Reddit comments for the first episode, and everyone goes, oh, this fucking woke bullshit. They forgot to write, they forgot that the show is a comedy. And it's like, the first episode is still funny, it's still a comedy show, but it's like, it did directly addressed. They skipped over the pandemic, which was good. That they just did one thing about like, this is how you high five in the COVID era, and then it skipped ahead a year, which is like, yeah, thank God. But yeah, it's like Rosa quit the force, and they make a joke about why Rosa quit the force, and Captain Holt says no, it's because of the guilt she felt when George Floyd was murdered at the hands of police officers, and you know, and essentially like couldn't stand being a cop after that. And I was like, damn, like they actually like mentioned George Floyd by name, and they were really like addressing it head on. And I think that was like a really important thing to do, rather than just being like, oh, cops have gotten a bad rap lately, deservedly so, but like, you know, I think was really good. But now
Jake's got to investigate a birthday cake thief.
But they, yeah, like, and they did this whole thing essentially that they introduced, like almost kind of a straw man, for like the bad cop played by John C. McGinley, Dr. Cox from Scrubs, and he was kind of like the embodiment of like a crooked cop and the reason why cops get away with what they do. And it was one of these things that it's like, yeah, you're telling it's a sitcom. You've got to kind of create a character that embodies an idea. And that episode, because the whole thing was, yeah, there was the victim of police brutality, but the cameras were conveniently turned off like they always are, and Jake takes on the case with Rosa because they went to Rosa's now PI, and Jake takes it on to be like, no, look, cops can still do good. And so he's trying to do the right thing. They go to like the police commissioner or whoever it was, or like I think the captain of the precinct that the cops were with, and she's like, oh, you know, sorry, I can't do anything because we don't have the body cam footage. They find it, and she goes, like, she's like, you know, I genuinely want to help you. They find the body cam footage, and she goes, oh, well, we're definitely getting rid of this. And deletes the footage, and essentially explains why she's not going to convict her two cops, because obviously she's not. And that's kind of Jake's big realization that, like, oh, fuck, even the ones that seem good are bad. And that kind of looms over the entire season in spoilers for the finale of Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Step ahead 10 seconds.
It ends with Jake leaving the 99th precinct. Mm-hmm. And I think the show did its finale as well as it could. Also, the other kind of important thing, and that's in this final season, is that they introduce this police reform program and it's accepted, and that's kind of like the show ends with that. You don't see how it affected anything kind of thing, but you hear what the police reform program is, and this whole thing of like defund the police, it kind of goes into showing like it's a good idea, and this is why, and this is kind of how it would look.
It is, I guess from a creative standpoint, I'm like, it reminds me of when John Ritter died and Eight Simple Rules kept going and had to explain why their main character was, or Glee, another show we could probably spend a whole episode talking about its problematic stars. It's a thing where it's like, it's crazy that the show that started Brooklyn Nine-Nine, the show that started and was this thing about just a cop version of Scrubs.
The Office, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, is now has to deal with this like pressing issue that the world itself has not been able to reach an answer. And it feels like something you could do, you end up being very clumsy with, I guess. Mm. But do you feel satisfied with where it went? Do you think it was justified?
Again, it's one of those, like, I'm not the one to make the call. I think it did a good job of still staying true to itself. I think that's a big thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of people think that first episode of season 8 betrayed the series by going too woke, and it's like, no, this stuff has always been there. Mm-hmm. There's a famous episode about with Terry Crews' character being stopped and frisked by another cop for being a black man. There's a great exchange, probably one of the best moments of the series, is when Holt essentially says, I don't think that you should complain about the other cop, Holt also being, you know, black, and it's one of those things where Holt has, you know, being a gay black cop through the 70s, has gone through all this, and then Terry Crews kind of, you know, brings him around to like the why. You know, like you struggled, and so that future people don't have to, and we should, like, all the progress that's been made, we should keep, you know, going on that. And yeah, it's a good episode, and it kind of addresses that sort of stuff. So it's like the whole thing of people being like, oh, Brooklyn Nine-Nine is never shied away from necessarily bad topics with the police, but I think that's a lot more broad strokes and blunt kind of stuff, whereas you look at those first few seasons and there's a lot of stuff, like I mentioned, like Rose's police brutality, and, you know, the things like Jake being kind of a shitty cop sometimes. It's like, yeah, it's harder to ignore those kind of things.
Right. Sweet. Well, do we have any more nice comments from the Discord anymore? One do you want to point and draw our attention to?
Well, one thing that people spoke about as well is that, like, is it okay to like art if they made it before, you know, the allegations?
Mm,
that's like, like, does that change things? I think I haven't fact checked it, but is like Rosemary's Baby, the Roman Polanski film, that was before everything, right?
Well, most of his films were before
everything. Yeah. But so it's like, can you still be like, because a few people said like, yeah, Rosemary's Baby's such a good movie. Like,
Have you seen Chinatown?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I love Chinatown,
commonly regarded as the greatest script of all time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, yeah. And yeah, like, does that make a difference, do you think?
Mm. I think probably not, if I'm being like truly like, what do I think? I think probably not. I think it's so difficult. And I think when it comes to separating the art from the artist, it is just a personal threshold each time.
And I think it's like, yeah, sure, if that's your personal threshold, like, I think that's, as far as personal thresholds go, that's a fine one.
And what we can look at, like, the good coming out of sort of this post Me Too, post Black Lives Matter protest kind of era that we're in, is like, I'm loving all the, you know, people of color directing films, women directing films, gay people directing films, and like, they're becoming more sometimes and more mainstream. Yeah. They're becoming more and more mainstream, and we are actually seeing like genuinely interesting films come out because of that. Some of my favorite movies from the past 5 years have been directed by people who look completely different from me, and you know, and I feel like there's such important perspectives for me to learn. And so maybe it's a balance. Maybe it's like, you can keep the stuff you love, but you got to be able to criticize it. You got to be able to understand what's wrong. And you've also got to be able to bring in what, you know, the new stuff coming in, so that you continually clearing out the chlorine filter in the swimming pool of your own psyche.
I think as well that, like, yeah, cause like the whole conversation around cancel culture is interesting, because I think it's like, as well, like the whole thing of like, what counts as being bad? Like, I think another big thing is like, it's kind of what you said about the is it a legal thing, but like, have they learned from it is like the biggest one, I think. Almost
if it's something they've said, I'm willing to forgive them if they, you know, say they've learned from it. If it's something they've done, I'm probably don't want to you know, watch them on a TV show.
I would recommend to anyone interested that there's a book and a corresponding TED talk by a guy called John Ronson. The book is called So You've Been Publicly Shamed, and it's kind of about cancel culture, but like before cancel culture was a thing. And one of the big things that he talks about in it is this woman called Justine Sacco, who in something like 2012 tweeted just before she got on a plane, saying like, I'm off to Africa, hope I don't get AIDS, just kidding, I'm white. That was the entire tweet. And then while she was in the air, it was like, you know, 12 hours or something like that. It was quite a long flight. And it blew up. And people were like...
the plane!
Yeah. People, there was the hashtag, has Justine landed yet? Like, you know, it was going viral. People went to the airport and wherever it was to like... to wait for her and get photos of her kind of thing. And it became this thing. It was like, this woman's life is over. And she has no idea, because they don't have Wi-Fi on the plane. And I think about it quite a bit, because she tweeted that to less than 60 followers, and it somehow blew up. And it's like, and it's one of those things that her joke is.
There's been a lot of discussion about
context.
The context of her joke, and like, this isn't me justifying it. This is me repeating the information I know about it. That like. Her friend group and her community was one where that was like, I think she had a lot of black friends, which is like it is a situation like that where it like sounds like maybe it was a my 60 followers, they'll know that I'm being ironic.
I'm playing the character of a privileged white idiot. And like, to me, it's like that tweet so obviously comes across as sarcastic. It's it's probably a bit more of an edgy joke than you should do. Mm. But yeah, I mean, like this woman, you know, trying to get a job for the rest of her life is forever going to have that tweet next to her name on Google. Yeah. And yeah, it is. I don't know. It's just an interesting thing. And like, I mean, read the book. He articulates a lot better than I do. But there's a lot of things. And Monica Lewinsky is like another fucking classic example of someone who was done wrong by cancel culture that. Mm. Yeah, she was preyed on by the most powerful person in the country. And everyone's like, oh, look at this little slut.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, there's the American Crime Story coming out about it, which I hope will, you know, help her receive some justice.
She's an executive producer on it, I believe. Mm.
And Monica Lewinsky's fucking hilarious. She's cool.
Yeah, she's
cool,
she's great on Twitter.
Yeah.
Well, so in conclusion, Richard, cancel culture, you have a problem with it? Is that?
Yeah.
Well, it's a scourge. Can't say anything these days. We should call this episode Can't Say Anything These Days.
John Cleese has that show coming out where it's like John Cleese is hosting a show where he talks to people who have been cancelled. And it's one of these things that's like, that's actually genuinely a really interesting idea. But
if John Cleese wasn't doing it.
Yeah, like actually, like to do a sit down interview with the likes of Kevin Spacey, Louis C.K., and do these actual genuine tell all interviews, because it would be actually like not to sympathize with them in any way, but just to actually have like, how did you find out you'd been cancelled? Like shit like that would actually just be really interesting to know. AJ's trying to line up his eyes to get a cool shot for the Zoom call, just for me, I presume. But yeah, like I don't know, just like it would actually just be interesting to see the other side of it, not to like sympathize them with anything. Don't get me wrong, but like I think it's just a fascinating untold story, you know. But John Cleese is gonna come at it with the, oh, you can't bloody say anything these days, and it's like to have someone like, because also I started watching The Morning Show on Apple TV, which is about someone being Me Too'd, and it's interesting because it's like it's Steve Carell's character gets Me Too'd, and you can't like, it's like obviously you cast Steve Carell in the role, so he needs to be a big part of it, but it's like, how much can you shove his side before you start to have to make him sympathetic to keep showing him? And it's like, it's interesting because it feels like one of the first kind of big pieces of media, and Bombshell as well, that was like showing, it was like about the Me Too movement essentially. And it's like, yeah, what's the point of the show? I haven't finished the first season, but yeah.
Look, I'll take a talk show where cancelled celebrities are interviewed if they don't get paid for their appearances. I think that's the only way. If they're like, you can come on here and say your piece, but we're not going to pay you.
Well, it's not even about like saying your piece. Like, I don't care what. Like, I'm interested from a factual point of view, and also it'd be interesting to see like how many of them would apologize and in what way and stuff like that.
I've heard quite enough from Chris O'Delia about what he thinks.
Because he keeps popping up on my TikTok, and it's because he always posts like fucking weird videos, and all the comments are just like, what are you doing? You're cancelled.
Well, hey, I think maybe we can wrap up the episode there. Thank you to everyone who commented on our Discord. Let us know, like I think we've done an all right job of not reaching a definitive answer to this, because it's not really it's a very open-ended question, the likes of which you and I aren't the people who should be answering it, but I did think it was interesting to talk about like how we consume art that maybe has been tarnished, and how we bloody live with ourselves, Rich, and what we learned is it's one pant leg at a time. So if you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to like us on all the social medias. We're on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Discord. You know, that's where we got a bunch of our comments from today. You can find a link to the Discord in the show notes. We've also got a Patreon, patreon.com/coldpopshow. And if you keep listening, Richard, to this episode after this music ends, then you're going to hear a bloody post-credit scene as well. So stay tuned for that.
Stay tuned. hello and welcome to the post-credits scene. Normally we stop recording these after an hour, and we're just we're still on the same record file as the last one. It's at an hour and 7 minutes. because, you know, we have trouble sometimes. But you know what? It wouldn't be the worst thing if we lost this episode. yeah, this is the post-credit scene. For $5 on Patreon, you can send us in a question for us to answer in one of these. So Joe Rundle said, what is a single film that you wish was turned into a franchise?
I Love You, Daddy.
American Beauty.
My answer to this is Who Framed Roger Rabbit, I think.
That's a great answer.
Less so because I want to see more of Roger Rabbit, and more so because I think live action animation hybrids is this format that fascinates me that has just not been utilized at all since it was invented in Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Presumably because it's fucking hard.
Did you say
hard.
Invented in Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Mastered in Who Framed Roger
right,
Rabbit.
Yeah, because I mean, like Mary Poppins is obviously
Cool World, I think, predates Who Framed Roger Rabbit as well. But since Who Framed Roger Rabbit, we've had what? Space Jam, Looney Tunes back in action, maybe half of Space Jam 2, if that, and like various SpongeBob movies, and that's all we've seen. And it's like, I know I want to live in the world of Roger Rabbit. I want to explore the world of like these noir film noir worlds where cartoons are, you know, employees and have unions and are actors, and it's, you know, about the interactions.
Couldn't make that these days though. My answer, I hope you're ready for this. I'm going to say a very funny answer, okay?
All right.
Are you ready to laugh?
Yep.
The Matrix. Too bad they never made any sequels. And while we're at it, if only they made a fourth Indiana Jones film.
And I'm so excited for The Last Airbender to get that live action series because they've never tried...
Oh, very droll. I don't know. District 10 is like one of the ones that's like it is coming, but that's one that like because it kind of promises a conclusion of the story. Although I kind of like the ambiguous ending of it, but
I
fucking hate the joke where people pretend that sequels don't. It's the laziest joke.
It's right up there with Too Fast, Too Furious.
It is. It's the exact same energy. Same energy.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.